We were standing in a heated silence beside a country bus stop, squinting at each other through the rain. Valerie held her cheek, the mascara in her eyes dissolving into a glassy mess that leaked down her face. My hand was trembling with a rage I couldn't find the words for. Suitcases we'd bought in a charity shop a few days before sat between us, so stuffed they looked swollen. Sunday coats clung to our skin. The fancy hairstyles we'd taken such great care with that morning had betrayed us, turning to frizz in the wet. For all our plans, we'd ended up looking like the very people we loved to ridicule. Hapless tourists who turned up in the village from time to time to peer at the map in the square. Almost always inappropriately dressed in clothes of a much higher station than our own. Egypts, we'd say, gawping from the counter of O'Leary's newsagents as the sky cracked, sending them running towards their rental cars. Where do they think they're going? This isn't the Canaries. Wiping the rain from my eyes, my heart surging, I turned to her. Why did you have to tell me that, Val? Why could you not just let it be? Valerie shrugged, letting her hand drop, revealing a welt the colour of the red berries we burst with our fingertips every summer as little girls. We'd smear their inner goo along our mouths, calling it lipstick, admiring ourselves in the mirror, smiling like we were movie stars. Sure, I had to tell you, she said, sniffing into a hanky, her voice a self-pitying mumble. Always the martyr, our Valerie. In the distance, the bus started its spluttering crawl up the hill. I grabbed for my case. As I went to step away, Valerie's nails dug into my wrist. Can we not be friends still, Brona? Can we not? I won't tell, I swear. Shaking her off, my eyes drank in the sodden landscape. A sky so weighted with greyness it felt like it was about to sit on you. All the dreary greens and browns running into each other. Like a bad painting someone had thrown a bucket of water over. This was meant to be our big adventure. But as with everything else, we could say the words, make shapes to book the tickets. But when all was said and done, we'd stay stuck, wasting our lives staring out at the rain. A pint glass in front of us, our dreams thickening the air, before disappearing like the smoke from the cigarettes we settled between our painted lips. When I stepped onto that bus, feeling its muggy heat mingle with my wringing clothes, pushing past the fear curling around my veins like ivy, Valerie's eyes looked like they were about to burst out of her skull. I was 16 the first time I realised the village was slowly sucking the marrow from my bones. It was one of those spring days when the air has a bite to it and the sky is a newborn blue. A gang of us were supping cans in the graveyard, our arses resting on the lichen-speckled gravestones, our heads thrown back as we laughed like braying donkeys. Valerie was doing her famous impression of J.P. Morris, a lad in our class at primary school who'd had a terrible stammer. She was mouthing like a gobdaw, her whole body convulsing as she hauled the words out of herself. What? Valerie's cheeks were puce with effort and laughter. Tears of mirth shone in the corners of her eyes. I took another swig, grinning as I looked around our group, at faces I'd known all my life. In that moment, the loop on which my world spun began to slow and stretch. Our laughter became bleak, garbled. Those familiar faces turned grotesque, noses morphed into pig-like snouts, eyes into cavernous coal-coloured sockets, smiles into mangled, fang-toothed hysteria. "What's up with you?" Valerie said, waving a hand in front of my eyes. Vomit erupted before I could reply, splatting all over her new trainers, a violent purging of breakfast porridge and cheap cider. Valerie was furious. "Me runners," she shrieked. "You dirty bitch, Brona." I said, "Sorry, Val." But I wasn't. Not really. Not when I thought about how J.P. Morris collapsed inside himself a little more every time Valerie shouted across the schoolyard. Have you learned to speak properly yet, J.P., or are you still a retard? When I lost my virginity to Jackie Dyer after a funeral one wet November evening, the only person I told was Valerie. A week later, I was stacking magazines in O'Leary's when Pat Murphy, legendary for not being able to keep his mouth shut about anything, ever, popped his head round the door to say, "I hear Jackie Dyer got his hole." I don't think a sentence has ever made me want to peel the skin off my bones more. After my shift finished, tearful and stinging with a mortified rage, I went straight to Valerie's, demanding to know just how Pat Murphy, of all people, knew my personal business. She turned away nonplussed, pouring another teaspoon of sugar into her mug. "Sure word gets around," she said, as if we were talking about the weather. "You know what Jackie's like after a skin full of pints." "Actually," I said, my throat constricting, "this has nothing to do with a skin full of pints. He promised me." Valerie shook her head as if I were a simpleton, as if she were the man expert. She who hadn't sniffed a fella, never mind kissed one. "They're all the same. Sure you know that, Brona. Sugar?" She tapped the bag with a teaspoon. Calm as I could, I put down my mug, pressing my shaking hands against my thighs. "No thanks," I said, taking the time to aim my arrow with sweet, malicious care. A moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. Isn't that what they say? I let my eyes drift along the swell of Valerie's gut. It had begun to spill over the top of her jeans like an over-baked cake ever since we left school. So much so that the lads had now taken to calling her Turnip Woman on account of her big belly and toothpick legs. I'd told them to stop. To shut up, ye eejits. After that day in the kitchen, I swore I never would again. My words hung in the air, silently reverberating as I knew they would. Valerie pressed the mug to her mouth, taking a stiff sip, as if the tea was suddenly sour to taste. My first time wasn't my only time with Jackie Dyer. We always seemed to find each other at the end of the night, an alcohol glaze fogging our senses, a basic, unspeakable want propelling us together in the glamorous surrounds of the chipper or the nightclub coat queue. If we had any meaningful conversations, I don't remember them. Every time I was with Jackie, I felt like a spectator to myself. He wheezed and gasped while I counted the cracks in the ceiling. Afterwards, he'd roll away, sparking a fag while I dressed. One night, as I clipped my bra into place, I asked him, "What do you want to do after college?" "Dunno," he said, scratching his patchy stubble. "Get a job, I suppose." I waited for him to elaborate. Instead, he opened a can. He didn't ask me what I wanted. "I want to travel," I said. "I want to live in London." Jackie raised his eyebrows. I had amused him. "Oh, do you know?" he said. "Is that right?" I pulled a face, ripped the fag from his fingers and took a long, angry drag. Valerie reckoned Jackie Dyer was the biggest ride in the West. We were sitting on her rose-patterned bedspread, practicing our makeup techniques, something I found vaguely amusing, while Valerie approached it with a zeal that was nearly uncomfortable to watch. "The girls are raging, you have 'em," she gushed, as I daubed glitter along her cheekbones. "Jenny says you're the luckiest bitch around." "We aren't even going out properly," I countered. "And anyway, Jenny is a tool." Valerie shot me a look. "You're the tool, Brona. He's Jackie fucking Dyer." "And what does that matter? He's just a lad." "Oh, get over yourself. Now, how do I look?" "Gorgeous." Valerie beamed into the mirror. "I always feel better with a bit of makeup on me," she said. The next time Jackie Dyer staggered toward me under the fluorescent lights of the chipper, I ignored him, flicking my hair as I turned away. Valerie nearly dropped her burger. "Have you gone mad?" she said, heels clicking as she followed me down the street. I ignored her too. It would have all been so simple if that little white wand hadn't turned blue. This time I didn't tell Valerie the truth, but I did convince her that we needed an adventure. "A trip to London," I said. "We're nearly 21 now. It's about time we saw a bit of the world, just the two of us. The other girls will be raging." I didn't wait for her to argue. I couldn't. With every penny I'd saved from stacking shelves in O'Leary's, I bought the tickets, made the arrangements, sold it to everyone who would listen. As two best friends taken off for a few weeks to have a laugh. I sold it so well I had Valerie believing it too. Until we got to the bus stop. When she asked, "Why are you so mad keen to go to London now anyway?" It was like someone had stuck the cold barrel of a rifle between my ribs. I pretended to be checking the time, ignoring her eyes scorching the back of my skull. "Jackie is heartbroken, you know," she said, slowly, purposefully. "He said it to the lads. He says he loves you. He wants to be with you, properly like. So if you're in trouble..." That's when I hit her. On the bus, I took a seat by the window. Valerie was calling at me through the glass. "This is wrong," she said, knocking the window. "Come back, Brona." I could barely hear her over the engine and the hissing rain. She looked like a fish mouthing for food. As we pulled away, her suitcase keeled over into a puddle. The last I saw, she had one hand on it and the other straining toward the bus. But it was too late. All she ended up grasping for was thin, wet air.
That was The Last Time I Saw Valerie and was read by the author Mary McGill. Tomorrow night at the same time, you can hear Patrick Dawson reading The Talking Doll by Daniel Hughes. You can listen back to the programme on the RTE radio player.